Sport makes more money ultimately because of the gambling aspect. You can't gamble on art. If you could gamble on art, then I think that probably we'd be getting a lot more funding.
And singing 90s nostalgic music was literally the best thing in the world, and we decided to get all of our communal bad bitch friends and bring them all together, and it's just kind of grown every week since then.
Hey, I'm Pip Rasmussen, and you're listening to All The Best. There's a well-known story about Sydney's iconic opera house. The white sails are used all the time to represent Australia's more cultured and artistic side. But when the opera house was being built in the 60s, this side of our identity was only just budding. In fact, many people couldn't wrap their heads around it. The construction of the opera house was plagued with problems, and amongst them was a cultural aversion at the time to spending too much money on the arts. The Danish architect Jørn Utzon, who was the head designer of the building, was an unorthodox surprise to the conservative New South Wales government of the 60s. As construction unfolded, the design, the funding, and the support for the opera house was slowly reduced by New South Wales government, so much so that Jørn couldn't actually afford to pay his own staff. The finished product ended up really different to his original plan, and he never returned to Australia to see his completed work. Today, Sydney Opera House is one of our city's most famous and impressive structures, a heritage asset recognised internationally, drawing about 8 million tourists a year. 50 years later, and 22-year-olds like myself are still finding the Opera House culturally relevant, and we're not going there to watch opera. We're watching artists like Bon Iver croon, and influential speakers like Ira Glass. If only 60s Australia had known how iconic and timeless the Opera House would become. This week, All the Best is taking part in FBI Radio's Sydney Unlocked special. FBI is creating a whole lot of amazing content around how we foster creativity in Sydney, and how we keep it vibrant, diverse, and exciting. On the show today, we're keeping things strictly Sydney, and we're looking at the lives of arty boss bitches, taken to the stage in 2016. Did you know, according to the Australian Bureau of Statistics, more Australians are actually going to art events and galleries than the footy, which is kind of amazing considering it's our most popular sport. It does make you wonder, if our country has such an appreciation for arts, why is the industry plagued with wage issues and funding cuts, gender disparity and loss of venues? A lot of us believe Sydney is changing. With the lockout laws, increased policing and rising rental prices, grassroots performance spaces are suffering.
Sport makes more money ultimately because of the gambling aspect. And you can't gamble on art. And if you could gamble on art, then I think that probably we'd be getting a lot more funding.
Candy Royale is a local artist, and she had some thoughts about the Sydney art scene.
People really want it. They want it. So why keep taking it away from them? Well, if the people are hungry for art, then they're hungry for something outside of what can't be controlled. So I'm based in Sydney. I live beachside in the eastern suburbs. I'm very lucky. I live in this kind of old wooden treehouse, which is the only way I can afford to live in the eastern suburbs because, you know, artists don't usually make enough to pay the rent over there. I'm a performing writer. Some people call me a poet. I called myself a poet for a long time, but I do a lot more than just poetry. I'm a performer, and I've been doing this for a really long time, for probably over a decade now, but I've been doing it professionally probably about 5 years, so that's full-time, committed. Like, my life is writing and performing. I really love Sydney. I think that it's a really beautiful city. I think that it is an inspiring city. It is just so visually captivating. And it also has, you know, really incredible pockets of community, of ethnicities, of politics. It's also, it's a real police state. So we know with the whole Sydney lockouts and all of that, that we've seen an impact on the arts, definitely on the performing arts, as well as the concerted effort to suffocate the arts through lack of funding. So when you take into consideration how much of a policed state Sydney is, and then you take into consideration the amount of funding that we've lost in the arts, it's a really hard time for, you know, artists coming up, performing artists. You're talking about a concerted effort against art. You're talking about concerted effort against performance. There's so many things that we have to fix in order to fix that. When I was coming up as a young artist, I really struggled with this whole, why isn't what I do valued? Like, why don't I get paid for this? Or why am I being given, you know, drink vouchers for the, you know, I have created art. Like, I've worked so hard, I rehearsed, like, my life is dedicated to this. So I always believe as art as a form of resistance, and so I think that now art has an opportunity to play a pivotal role in pushing back against the incredibly tough laws that are in place. We can complain, and we have a right to, and we, you know, we can lament the state of the arts in Sydney, but we also then have to be really vocal, whether it's through visual art or, you know, performance art or whatever it is. Absolutely, artists have to be activists until we reach utopia.
Candy is also passionate about women's representation in the arts, and thinks there's still a long way to go, even in Sydney.
The best way that I can talk about what it's like to be a woman in the art scene in Sydney is like this. A little while ago, I was asked to be on a lineup of performers, and basically it was 7 men and me. And originally I was told I had 20 minutes, right? 20 minutes to perform. And as we got closer and closer to the date, the organizer kept contacting me and saying, actually, you know, we need to give the dudes a bit more time, so we're just going to reduce your time, So there's 3 headliners, me, 2 other guys, out of, and, you know, still 4 or 5 other guys. And I said to the organizer, who was at the time a friend of mine, I said, man, you know that you've just cut me down to 7 minutes. Your other 2 dudes have got, you know, 15 to 20 minutes each. What do you think about me being the only woman on this lineup and you've given me the least amount of time? And he said, oh my God, Candy, I'm so sorry. I didn't even think of that. And I tell that story because I don't actually think that there is this male conspiracy happening out there to keep women out of the arts. I think that it's unconscious, and that's just as problematic. That means you're just as complicit in ensuring that women are underrepresented in the arts. If you are an event organizer, or if you believe that women have equal right to a voice in the arts world, then you have to make a concerted effort to include women, and not just women, women of color, queer women. One of the greatest beauties of Sydney is its diversity. So the piece that I'm going to perform is called Humanity. I'm a really, really staunch feminist. I find that with the privilege I have with this microphone and touring and talking to people, I can paint these pictures that happen in my life and happen in the lives of others that are real, and I think demonstrate why feminism is so important. This piece is a collection of true stories that happened while I was traveling, and I think that they highlight how important feminism is. Her hair is the color of coal, same color as that around her eyes. Her hands are hennaed, and I study the designs as she hennas my hands. I want to be lost in the traditions of old, so I'm sitting on a dank carpet in a room carved out of rock. I ignore the muted television in the corner, and I tell her that since being in her country, I've been groped and assaulted sexually, that the men have taken it as their right to rub up against me. She told me as a Western girl, I deserved it. It's what we are, how we act, trying to take their men and make demons out of them. I told her that MTV did not represent me, that those gyrating bodies were symptoms of a world gone ill, but no more sick than in her country, where as far as the eyes can see, men in pants and stained shirts roamed the streets a sea of sweating, heaving masculinity, whilst the women are in their houses, their lives silenced, restricted. I said, we both live in worlds that are washing us away. There are bigger forces at play. I pressed my palms and fingers together in prayer and said, I have only love for you, sister. I'm in an Indonesian marketplace. Charcoal chicken, fish, sweat permeates the air. Opposite me sits a man telling a story about how he once rescued a woman. See, she was heavy with child, living in economic exile in Dubai, her employer trying to rape her daily. One day, she couldn't take it anymore and ran. This man found her on the streets, took her in, helped her give birth. He told me there was so much blood he thought she was going to die. How he held that baby in his arms, trying to silence its cries so the neighbors wouldn't hear the delivery and report him. Eventually, he got them on a plane but ended up in jail for 6 months just for helping them escape. I asked him why he did it. He said, sister, in this man's world, what chance does a woman have? I'm in Belize. The beauties abound with their Hispanic mixed with pidgin English, where their faces sport bruises, their men under the influence of true demons, not least of all alcohol, poverty, and all the violence that comes with it. I met a girl who thought she'd escaped by dating a German. He immigrated to be with her, but his addiction to power had her on her knees daily, where her passion to dance made her a slut. Where she wanted love, he gave her demands, conditions on which she'd have to live. We'd go outside walking and talking, his suspicious eyes always on me, and I'd say, listen, sister, you don't need anyone's love when you love yourself. You are your own god, and with a little bit of self-belief, you can tell him to go fuck himself. And she did, received bruises for her efforts, but packed her stuff, moved to Guatemala, married an amazing man, and now dance for a living. I remember all I've been told, how I'm only good for blowjobs and babies, how my sense of self-worth is specifically tied to my size, my tits, the color of my skin, my eyes. Let's be clear about this. I have a father, a brother, male friends who love me because they understand that a woman's worth is equal to their own, but the major message out there isn't doing much to support the truth of the matter. I have traveled the world over. I've seen battered lives, bruised existences. I've seen people look at me with envy, distaste, and distrust. But I've also known how it feels to be in the presence of those who understand. We are connected by a shared sense of what's right, what's wrong, where we belong, what makes us strong, and how we can heal the world of all those things that continue to blight the fact that we are human. That we are human. And this sharing of stories, these connections, this could be humanity.
That story was by Candy Royale, with a performance of her poem, Humanity. Just a heads up, this next story has some bad language in it. So I got invited to this Facebook event, and it was for a performance of a choir. And they were called Bad Bitch Choir. That name, it had me hooked straight away. And I wanted to get to know who these bad bitches were. So I went to one of their rehearsals to get to know them.
Places, everybody. Places.
It's like a collective. It's like this crazy collective of people who, up until recently, I didn't even know what they did for a day job. I didn't know that, you know, someone studies bloody nature, someone's friggin' studying to be a criminologist. Like, I was like, really? You guys have lives? Like, I had no idea. Because it's kind of nice to go somewhere and most people don't really ask you about your day other than how was it. No one asks you, what do you do? No one asks you, I don't know, there's just not, you don't have to identify with your day job. And that's not something you get to do. Like, that's not something that happens often in society. You always have to identify with what you do. No one asks those questions here. And it's just like a cool thing that we can come together for for singing.
My name is Kate. I have been part of the choir for 3 years? 2 and a bit years. I randomly saw the original group that the choir girls sang with on a stage, and I started Instagramming these two girls called Twinsess. And then I saw in their photos that they had like a choir at their lounge room.
Well, I was actually one of the original Bad Bitches. There was four of us, and we used to do backing vocals for another band in Sydney.
My boyfriend kind of got me into it, actually. He bumped into a couple of our friends who were already part of it, and he was like, where are you guys going and what are you doing tonight? And they're like, oh, we're going to choir. And he's like, what's this fucking choir? Like, Lauren would love to join a choir. And when he told me, I was like, oh, now they have to let me be. And I kind of always really wanted to sing, and, you know, I've been watching all my friends perform for years, and I was just like, oh, that would be so amazing to do, but I just never considered actually doing it.
And I just wrote to them and said, oh, I see you've got a choir, can I join? And they're like, yeah, come along. And so I went along and was like super quiet and just sat in the background for ages, and, you know, just kept turning up and turning up. And then the band broke up, and then the girls stayed together, and so I got to be part of that.
We just decided that getting together once a week and getting drunk and singing 90s nostalgic music was literally the best thing in the world, and we decided to get all of our communal Bad Bitch friends and bring them all together, and it's just kind of grown every week since then.
But it was great. Like, it was so chill, you know, for the first year, really. Like, I never thought we would perform. And then, I don't know, not long after that, we did this gig that Kate, you know, first came to, the big Twinsess, like, kind of finale for now, I guess, at Good God. So it was my first time performing live ever at Good God on my 30th birthday. I was like, way to age. So cool. And it was such an amazing show. And then, yeah. Oh, that's gonna tell me what the- So we were always just doing backup parts for performances. And I think people just got a bit curious about us. I feel like we got some bookings just off our name. Like, people were like, that sounds rad. and then we went, and I guess I still kind of discount it. Like, we still kind of sometimes don't get, I guess, why people love it so much, because we're not necessarily like all the best singers, or, you know, just we've never done a shit show, really. Like, my friends who are writing original music for years, I'd seen them play in like so many little bars, like little audiences, and we just seem to skip that just by doing covers.
I wanna settle down. I wanna settle down. Won't you settle down?
I have to ask, though, like, I've got two sisters and we're all very strong-minded, femme-identifying women, and sometimes when the three of us get together and you throw my mum in there, it's like a lot, and I'm just looking around and it's like 25 women, and like, how do you do that?
Yeah, there are sour days, like, in all of the years, like, there's no time, we're not trying to hide it. We have arguments sometimes, but everybody is accepting and loving and patient, and we all have a really, they're just really good humans.
And how do you decide on songs with it being such a big group?
That is such a good question. We actually, that's like kind of on the agenda for tonight. We're still trying to figure it out.
We had like a massive meeting, like a facilitator come in last week, because as much as we're all open to each other's ideas, like with a group of people, sometimes it's just loudest voice wins.
We used to just basically, if you had a song that you wanted to sing a lead for, you just suggest it, and I guess originally there was no pressure around, again, performing that. So it was just like people were just happy to do whatever, and we just kind of mess around and work out parts. And we've kind of just kept doing that since.
We're coming up with a template. And so basically we've got to come up with a template and a list. And the list is going to go in chronological order, yet to be determined, of like whose turn it is to be a lead. That person then has to submit 3 suggestions to the choir and put it like in a genre box, like sassy, sexy, cool, fun, like whatever it is. And then we have to compare it to the songs that we have to see what's missing. And then the choir votes on like one song. So out of the 3 songs that you put forward, you get to do one.
There's some people, I guess, who've had more training or spend more of their personal time like working on music, producing, writing or whatever, and kind of can come up with an arrangement quicker. So at the moment we're kind of, I guess, thinking about how can we all develop some really great skills with arrangement and come up with a more, you know, making sure that everyone gets enough time up the front and, yeah.
No matter what level you're at, you get to sing a lead or have a song of your choice in the set. So that's what's not, you know, I guess if something wasn't working, it's that not everybody was having equal input into what we're singing. And that's like not, you know, we're supposed to be a democracy. So we're trying to make that happen.
Bad bitch choir to you?
Bad bitch. I mean, what bad bitch is for us is like total acceptance of femme identifying humans, or like, but also every human. But we're particularly like pro femme identifying, sort of like giving a safe space and being yourself, being unique, standing up for yourself, being strong, and that's bad bitch. So the music and the songs and like coming together collectively and putting on an entertaining performance, I think what we're trying to achieve is getting the audience to feel that. And that's actually what I felt, because I'm a newer member. I saw the choir in a smaller group before I joined, and when I saw them it was electric, and like my heart just swelled and I just felt that energy, and I was like, oh my god, like, this is serious, this is so energizing and so loving and caring, and I wanted to be a part of that, and that's what I think the shows are about, like involving people in that feeling and giving people confidence.
I thought you were God.
And we all really appreciate how lucky we are to like know each other and be involved with each other, and I think that spurs each other on to like give time and patience to sort through any disagreements or bad weeks. Everybody knows we have bad weeks, and we're just so invested in making it work as a project, as a musical project, but also as a friend group.
I thought you were.
So after we recorded this story, I actually asked them about joining the choir, and I was super lucky. They needed some low voices, so now I'm officially a bad bitch. If you want to hear more of FBI Radio's Sydney Unlocked content, you can find it at fbiradio.com/Sydney Unlocked. All the Best is broadcast from FBI Radio in Sydney in association with SYN and 3RRR in Melbourne. Our executive producer is Selena Shannon. Tegan Nichols compiles our show. Our community coordinator is Aidan Molines. My co-host is Michael Bryden, and I'm Britt Rasmussen. All the Best is played across Australia on the Community Radio Network. Unlock more great stories at our archive at allthebestradio.com. And while you're there, subscribe to our podcast on iTunes.